Welcome to The Book Show, a celebration of reading and writers. I'm Joe Donahue. A coming-of-age story and a thrilling political mystery, True Believers, is Kurt Anderson's new novel, introducing a new heroine to contemporary fiction. Karen Hollander is a celebrated attorney who recently removed herself from consideration for appointment to the U.S. Supreme Court. Her reasons have their roots in 1968, an episode she's managed to keep secret for more than 40 years. Now, with the imminent publication of her memoir, she's about to let the world in on that shocking secret as soon as she can track down the answers to a few crucial last questions. Today, only a handful of people are left who know what actually happened. As Karen reconstructs the past and reconciles the girl she was with the woman she is now, the power of memory and history and luck become clear. Kurt Anderson is the author of the best-selling novels Heyday and Turn of the Century. He's also written for film, television, and the stage. He's host of the Peabody Award-winning public radio show Studio 360, contributes to Vanity Fair, New York, and Time. Previously, he was a columnist for The New Yorker, editor-in-chief of New York, and co-founder of Spy, and it's a great pleasure to welcome to this week's book show.
It is a pleasure to be back, Joe. Thanks.
Well, thank you very much for being with us. What led you to this time period, but I guess more specifically, this character?
Well, the time period, I mean, I was alive. I'm younger than Karen Hollander, my character, but I was alive, and obviously the late 1960s were a pivotal time that still have impact in our lives today. But this character, I as characters and stories occur to one, it came in little germs and little bits and pieces. And at first I thought, oh, be interesting to have some kids who were 12, 13 when the James Bond novels came out at the height of the Cold War and became obsessed with them, because, you know, I was not obsessed with James Bond personally as a kid, but I know what that's like to be a kid and suddenly find your sort of fictional Camelot that you obsess over. And then I thought, oh, well, and those kids just a few years later would be in college at the height of the war and the height of the anti-war movement. And how would that play out? So it developed over a couple of years. And I've been thinking about it, you know, for a decade, really.
What was it like to you have written that perspective, a female perspective, before?
Well, I've never written a first person novel before. I've written first person short stories, but never for a whole novel in the I did this and this is my story. It was always the third person. But I've written what I think are lovable, big female characters before, which I enjoyed doing. But I decided, that for this story, it made sense to make her a woman for a lot of reasons having to do with the story, having to do with the fact that to the degree this is about, you know, it's set today and she's looking back and it flips back and forth between the 60s and today. I thought it made sense for her to be a woman because women's lives over the last 45 years have changed tremendously in a way that men's have not quite. So I thought it would be more interesting.
What challenges does that bring? Does it bring a special set of challenges?
Well, a first person brought more technical challenges to me because it's a whole different set of issues about how likable the character needs to be, what information she gives or holds back as the book goes on. She's in every scene, essentially. So those were challenges were real. Writing as a woman, I don't know, maybe I have the hubris of having spent 25 years living with two daughters and a wife, and I feel like I kind of know how women think to the degree they think differently than men, which I think is subtler than is popularly imagined. But I did, because it's first person and because it's a woman, I spent a lot of time sort of, you know, trying out different versions of the voice before I hit on one that I thought worked.
In that hitting on it, did it make more sense for you then to attack it the way that you did, which is, hey, I'm writing this book right now. You are with me in this process.
I sort of got the voice before I decided that how I begin the book was how I would begin the book, which is this very kind of straightforward, literal, I am this person, here's who I am, I am writing a memoir because my publisher wants me to, but I'm not writing the memoir that they think I'm writing. So I got very invested as a writer in the literal conceit of she is writing this book. And yes, you, the reader, are with me, Karen Hollander, as I'm looking into my past and figuring out why I was able to live the life I've led.
With those questions out there of how was I able to live this life that I led, it lends itself to many question marks, of course, but the mystery thriller nature of the novel surprised me.
Because I haven't written a mystery or a thriller before?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's funny.
Well, it became more of a page-turner.
Well, yeah, and I was happy to do that. I mean, on one hand, I think every novelist writes the same book over and over again. So on the other hand, at least as a novelist, I try to mix it up and do something different. My last book was historical, set in the 19th century. This one is set in the 1960s and now. And it's first person. And it does have this mystery thriller spine I didn't imagine at the beginning, oh, I'm going to write a political thriller. But that's what it became once I had the idea and saw where that led.
Did that require more plotting in the sense of more of a diagram, more of an outline than another novel would?
Well, I somewhere between having a strict, absolute outline that I follow with utter fidelity for a year and a half as I'm writing, I always have, you know, a basic, a sketch that becomes a more precise sketch, and then a map and a kind of an outline. Yes, but yes, with this book, because there are so many strands that need to connect in certain ways, it was much more of a kind of careful clockworks construction than in my previous novels, for sure.
You mentioned the James Bond connection, these characters talking about Bond, of the characters who are some so familiar that can call him James, the other one that just refers to him as Bond. You said you were not, and I wanted to go back to this, you said you were not a particular fan of the Bond novels.
Maybe it was because I was too young. I don't know. But I never read an Ian Fleming James Bond novel until I began to write this, until I was decided to do this book. And I read about half of them in the course of my research. No, I was not. I watched the movies like everybody else, but I was not a James Bond fan. I was a Tolkien fan. I was a Kurt Vonnegut fan, somewhat obsessively, but not Ian Fleming.
So what was it like when you read him for the first time, in the sense of, okay, because he's going to be included in some way in my work?
My biggest reaction was that, wow, these are actually, as literature, as popular literature, so much better in many ways than the movies. They take themselves more seriously than the movies ever have. And women are not just sex objects, and it's not just about the gadgets. In the early ones, there aren't any gadgets at all, which is what we think of as James Bond. And James Bond has a soul and has existential crises. I mean, I don't want to make too much of them, but they're far more ambitious books than, having not read them and having only seen a million movies about James Bond, I expected.
Karen is such an interesting character because she is a very strong, politically motivated woman of the time. And was that something that you had to even historically look at how that would be perceived?
Yeah, I did. I mean, again, she's, and one thing I've always thought and certainly realized all the more as I was writing this character in this story, she is 5.5 years older than I. But that 5.5 years difference, and I had sisters 7 years older than I, and I knew it then that, wow, their life as teenagers in the 1960s is so different than my life. Just those few years made a big difference. So, yeah, I was alive then, but I did have to talk to people, do research, read a lot of memoirs of 60s radicals. Karen is very different than the famous 60s radicals, because what she did, the extreme thing that she does as a kid, she gets away with, and as soon as she gets away with, she says, whoa, I'm not risking this again. I'm going to live the straight and narrow from now on. And so it's not a story of a fugitive, as you know, or anything like that. She is you know, she is like many of your listeners, no doubt.
But she really went off the deep end.
She, at a moment in 1967, 1968, she absolutely went off the deep end.
When you look at that mystery and the secret that she is looking to even come to terms with herself, How fleshed out was that in your mind all along?
The basic idea, the very basic, you know, stick figure idea of what happens was the always the idea. But then to set it up and to set up who knew what, when, how, who was compromised this way or that way, that was in a kind of plot construction way. And when do you show this card in your hand or that card in your hand? That was all carefully worked out in the process of writing.
This secret, the specific episode from her young adulthood, you have to wonder whether she would be able to keep that secret today.
Well, and as she says, Karen says in the book, you know, I'm not a big believer in conspiracy theories because it's hard to keep any big secret in any day. So I share that belief. So I had to construct a situation where it would be in all of the knowers of the secret's prime interest to keep it and to have not very many people know the secret. But yeah, I think in any day it would be tough to keep that secret. But when the incentive is great enough for everybody to keep a secret, as it is in this case, it can happen. It does happen, I'm sure.
I think we've all had that experience where we learn something about somebody else in which they have led in some way, shape, or form a double life, and you're shocked.
Yes, and even those of us who didn't, you know, kill a hobo in Reno 40 years ago, that isn't her secret, by the way, or whatever. If we don't have spectacular secrets like Karen does, we all, you know, we don't all live transparently, and our thoughts and dreams and a thing we did here or a thing we did there are secrets. So in a certain way, she's just an extreme example of many of us, if not all of us.
But you certainly look at how this strong, politically active individual would differ now, would survive in this world.
Well, for sure. And she has this 17-year-old granddaughter, Waverly, to whom she's very close, who is a young protester activist who doesn't know about the extent and the extremity of her grandmother's past, as no one does. And so as the granddaughter is talking about her, giving her critique of modern world and her interest in protesting, it becomes an interesting conversation, I think, between them about, you know, what is different and the same between the 1960s and now.
True Believers is Kurt Anderson's new novel. It is published by Random House. When you look at this as a writer, do you put yourself on a track of I want to write so many novels, or how do you? This is your third.
You mean before I die?
How do you look at it? Do you say I'm good for so many a year? Is it something you always want to be working on one?
Since I've started doing it as along with this radio show, my full-time occupation, which I started doing 15 years ago, basically. Yeah, I do always want to be working on a book and usually a novel. I mean, I have nonfiction book ideas that I'm trying to decide right now, in fact, whether my next book should be another novel or a nonfiction book. But yeah, I always want to have a book that I'm working on. Otherwise, I feel a little untethered and ungratified. I mean, there's nothing harder to do in my life than write a novel I'm happy with. But like all things, when you finish it, there's no greater pleasure.
Turn of the Century was your first novel.
It was.
That was an amazing. It was an amazing novel, and it was such a strong debut because it was huge. It was a very complex story at a complex time, that turn of the century, and it seemed like a lot to take on for the first time.
It was. I mean, certainly. I mean, I didn't realize I had the protection of fools, of not realizing how much I was taking on until I was in the middle of it and had no choice but to proceed. But I think one of the reasons I guess I had the chutzpah to try something so ambitious my first time out is that I was not a kid. I didn't start writing this I started a novel when I was a very young person and put it away, blessedly. But Turn of the Century, which I didn't start writing until I was 40 years old, I had, you know, at 40, I'd had, you know, a half a career as a writer and as an editor and a life. So I felt as though I didn't write it the way I did in order to make a splash or anything, but I was confident enough. And in a way, I wouldn't have been at 25 had I finished and tried to publish a novel.
You have that life experience, and you come at it with a little bit of confidence, perhaps more certainly than you would have in your early work.
In my case, absolutely. I mean, I'm amazed when writers like Jonathan Safran Foer or Teo Obred or whomever write these extraordinarily masterful novels at age 24. That wasn't the way it could have or did work for me. And I don't think I had to necessarily wait till I was 41. But for me, having the confidence in my life experience, in my technical ability as a writer, all of it really didn't fully ripen until certainly well into my 30s.
What impact did the journalism have on the writing of the novel and the novels, in the sense of, does that deadline pressure ease away, or does it help you become, for you, in looking at that particular work as a journalism, does that help in the process? Does it make you a better novelist?
Well, certainly writing journalism and essays, and I'd written, you know, a screenplay here or there, some fiction, but basically writing journalism and essays for 15, 20 years, just in terms of knowing how to build a sentence and construct a story and listen carefully to voices, and all those things are useful and transportable skills to fiction for me. Certainly when I started, I probably overdid the research in a certain way, because that's what I'd done. That's what you do when you're a journalist, is you research and then you write the story. So I spent, you know, a week hanging around Microsoft and a couple of weeks hanging around television productions in Los Angeles, which were all useful, and I think they made it a better book. But with the first one, I wasn't as ready as I was subsequently, I think, to simply use what's in my head and to concoct fiction.
Discipline was the word I was looking for. So when you look at it, at how it impacted this one of having that, what was the discipline that you had that enabled you to have this day job at Studio 360 and be able to write the novel?
Well, fortunately, unlike you, Joe, I only have to do 1 hour of radio a week. So which I do here mostly in the afternoons. And so my prime writing time is the mornings. I try to write from, you know, 8 a.m. till lunch. Basically, that's my writing time when my head is clear and I mostly turn off the email and so forth. Once, you know, the starting gun goes off for a book, I'm very disciplined, and every day, including Saturdays and Sundays, are potential writing days. I don't write 7 days a week, but I probably write 6 days a week, and I stick to it. And having had real day jobs for, you know, 15 years or so, or 20, where you have to be in an office every day and all that, that sort of got wired into me. So I don't go anywhere to write. I go to another room of my house and sit down. But I treat it like a job.
I was in talking to writers who have had the experience of being an editor, say that really helps them in that process, because they almost see the red mark coming on the manuscript. Is that the same for you?
It is indeed. Yeah. I was a magazine editor for 10 years, and it was a very valuable 10 years, at the end of which I then started writing novels. In terms of my preparation and the journey I happened to take to come to where I am, it was very valuable, I think. It's still hard to treat one's own work as ruthlessly as you need to and as you can other people's work. But I find, you know, I can write, I write a chapter or a page or a draft. You know, as soon as I get some distance in terms of time, I can then regard it with a kind of cold, semi-objective eye as an editor.
We've talked a lot about this book in the sense of it being a thriller and a mystery and the secrets, but I certainly want listeners to know about the humor. It is a very, very funny book.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, no, I mean, that's the it would be hard for me to write a novel, I think, that was entirely devoid of humor.
Yeah. So back to what you were just saying about that editing process, how do you keep that humor fresh, revision after revision after revision?
Well, how do you keep anything fresh the 189th time you've read it and lose all ability to know if that's funny or smart or fresh or original? But you're absolutely right. Humor especially is hard to have a sense of after repeated lookings at. So that in particular is difficult. You know, I mean, you mentioned I started and ran Spy Magazine for a while. I sort of the humor comedy writing part of my life has been there all along. So I have some experience in judging whether, you know, something is funny or not. But again, with a book that is, in this case, you know, not a comic novel, even though it is full of, I hope, and I'm happy that you think so, funny things, to that particular sandwich of thrillerness, sort of serious meditations on life and age and history and humor is a delicate sort of nouvelle cuisine sandwich to put together.
How do you look back in the Spy Magazine years?
With unalloyed pleasure. It was like being, you know, one of the front men in a great band for a few years.
And how did it all come together?
Graydon Carter and I were both working at Time Magazine in the 1980s, in the mid-1980s, and became friends and started having lunch and talking about, in a larky way, not let's start a magazine, but what would be the ideal magazine that doesn't exist that we would love to read? And that's how it became invented, without trying to invent it. And then we met a guy Tom Phillips, who became our publisher, and said, "No, this is a good idea. Let's do it." And that's how it happened.
And for many people now, they probably can't imagine such a magazine existing, of humor, a magazine of satire.
Well, we have a web full of satire and full of humor, right, and full of what's called snarkiness. We were very lucky to have the idea we had and to be the age we were at the very end of the pre-internet age. Really, it wouldn't have, or maybe such a thing would have been possible if we'd had the idea in 1996 and done it online. I don't know. But the fact that we did it during the last decade before there was an internet was one of the strokes of luck we had.
Do you think of yourself as less snarky now?
I never use that word, but snarkiness, for better or worse, you know, probably ought to diminish with age. You know, so sure. I hope I don't ever become, you know, an entirely solemn, sage-like old person. But yeah, sure. And the other thing, I mean, one of the problems of trying to do what we did at Spy online is you got to do it every hour of every day. And, you know, who is that funny or interesting or satirically worthy all the time? We had the luxury of doing it once a month. That's a kind of apples and oranges historical condition.
Kurt Anderson's new novel is True Believers. It is published by Random House. I want to thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate your time.
It was such a pleasure, Joe. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Again, the new novel is True Believers. It is published by Random House. We enjoy hearing from our listeners about the show. You can email us at book@wamc.org, and you can listen again to this or find past book shows at wamc.org. Sarah LeDuc produces our program. Thanks to the crew at WNYC for the recording time and space. Bookmark us for next week, and thanks for listening for The Book Show. I'm Joe Donahue.